example, a psychiatrist or such, whereas the information that was basically discussed as being needed in the hearing was the information that was limited to things like broken bones, surgical scars, missing organs, and things like that that would help identify a body, in fact, and that is where the emphasis is and what the amendments are, the limitations of the kind of information being sought is directed in that manner. The purpose of the amendments is to work our system into the National Unidentified Dead and Missing Persons Program. Section 1 directs the state police to consult with the state medical examiner and establish a file of records relating to unidentified human remains. In addition to any other file that the state police maintain, they're to put unidentified dead information into the federal system. Section 2 directs the state medical examiner to turn over information in their records to the state police for any remains that they can't identify within 30 days. Section 3 provides when a person is reported missing, the police agency is to enter a missing persons report into state and federal records within 48 hours. The police give the person a form to fill out, which would be prescribed by the executive department for collecting medical, dental, and other physically descriptive information that is likely to be useful in identifying remains of the missing person, and request that person to provide the data to the police, or the police can request the information directly from the dentist, denturist, optometrist, physician, etc., such information as is likely to be helpful in identifying human remains of the missing person. That information would be entered into a state and federal records. Section 4 requires that the dentist, doctor, etc., upon receipt of a written request from a parent, spouse, guardian, or police agency for the kind of identifying information that was just described, to provide that information on request forms that are provided for that purpose. The way that I read that section, the doctor, for example, could be handing the information over to a parent or spouse or police, depending on who brings in that form to them requesting the information. The information is restricted, section 4 sub 2 states that the information obtained under that section is restricted to use for the location of missing persons and the identification of unidentified human remains. I talked to Mr. Davidson about that idea because it seemed to be what I was confused about before, I was confused about again, which was whether this identifying information was to be the kind that was going to help locate a missing person or a dead body. And we limited it to certain kinds of information, and then which is the kind that would identify remains, to take sort of a strict reading of the kind of information that you're going to be able to get from a doctor or a dentist or whatever. And then that subsection 2 provides that the information can be used to locate missing persons and the identification of unidentified human remains. I suppose that the same information that's going into the missing persons file might help identify missing persons also, and maybe a better word than location would be identification. And I did talk to that about that with Mr. Davidson, who said that he thought that might be a clearer description of what the information might be used for. Section 5 provides that if the state police are notified that there's a matchup between remains and a missing person, that they would notify the medical examiner and police agency that are involved. If the remains are identified, the report of the unidentified dead is to be canceled. And when the missing person is found or remains are found, then the police are to cancel reports to the state and federal authorities, which would mean wiping it out of their records, as I understand from Mr. Davidson. However, as to information they have received, and this is in subsection 2 on of section 5, the agency, it states, seals the information if the person is living and keeps confidential information if the person is no longer living except for the use to investigate or prosecute a criminal action. My memory of that meeting, and Mr. Davidson didn't recall that same conversation, my memory had been that the intent was to, while it said that the records would be sealed, that the intent was to destroy the records as opposed to seal them. But I, that's a question, you know, for the committee or for the police agencies that would be keeping those.
You're speaking of line 18.
Yes. Well, really 18 through 23. I just didn't know what happened if the missing person gets found eventually, and I think I was mostly thinking of a missing person who shows up living and no longer missing. So maybe it's more relevant to that part, I guess.
Question or two. In looking back over the authorization, well, the directive in section 3, subsection 2, sub B, it says request directly information likely to be useful in identifying the human remains of the missing person. Then in section 4, in identifying the obligation to respond and in defining the information which is covered by that mandate, it refers to information which can be used for identifying the missing person as well as identifying unidentified human remains. Are those two not out of sync somewhat?
Well, that was
in the strictest sense.
I guess that's the part that has caused me some confusion as to whether the kind of information that they're asking to seek from at this point, they can get certain information from the person that comes in and reports the person missing. I guess the place where it got stickier for me was if when they're going to dentists or doctors or whatever and asking for additional information. Three did restrict it to the kind of information that would be useful to identify a dead body. Now, I don't know that that means that it couldn't be useful in some instances in identifying a missing person as well. But that's the first reference to the use of that information in really finding missing persons as, or identifying missing persons as opposed to human remains. The one instance that Mr. Davidson had suggested that in some cases people are found who perhaps are mentally incompetent or would have amnesia or something like that, where maybe that same kind of information might identify who that missing person is. As to its use broader than that in identifying missing persons, this is the only place it's mentioned, but I know that the other kind of, this is the only place it fits into the bill in any case. I should further explain that while I can't identify, because I didn't read against each other Mr. Davidson's proposal against these amendments, I know that they were based on those amendments. There had there were some modifications that were developed by legislative counsel with Mr. Davidson along the way between what he submitted and what's here before you in his amendments. I don't think it's extensive, but I can't identify every change that might have been made.
Well, looking back to those amendments, it seems to me that they contemplate that the information that can be requested is, speaks of any available dental, medical, or physical information that would assist in the identification of the missing person. Mm-hmm. Now, that's consistent with the with what Section 4 says about what kind of information you can seek and which the particular kind of practitioners are required to provide.
Where was your first reference to? To which information?
Well, I was going back to the amendments mm-hmm. that were submitted from which these were developed. And those speak to dental, medical, or physical information that would assist in identification of the missing person. Not restricted to remains as such.
Right. Well, do you think that, the way that I described it to legislative counsel, which is the way I understood it from the committee, is narrower than the committee intended? The language that was used in the conceptual motion referred to identification of missing persons, but all the conversation, there was a lot of going back and forth between whether it was going to be human remains or missing persons, and a lot of, when we kept asking what kind of information are you talking about getting from doctors and things, it was whether the person had an organ replaced or removed, or whether they had a fracture which would later show up in x-rays, and all those kinds of things are not the kinds of things you could tell about a person walking down the street to see if they were that missing person. It was all the kinds of things that they were describing seemed like the kinds of things that you would perhaps find on a body.
Well, it seems to me that there are some forms of information which could be used both for identification of a person and a living person and identification of human remains. There could be visible scars, for example, surgical scars, tattoos, although I don't know if the doctor's records would reflect those, unless... Let me come at it this way. My only point is to the committee that viewing now the detailed amendments, it seems to me that there is an inconsistency between the way Section 3 frames the direction to the police agency as to what they request and what this Section 4 says that the person requested must provide.
Did you adopt these amendments?
Mr. Chair?
As I'm reading this amendment, proposed amendment, Section 3 talks about within 48 hours of the city or county police, within 48 hours of them being notified that someone is missing, they're to file this report and request dental records and stuff like this. And I'm just thinking that there's a lot of missing persons that are kids that run away or something, and they're gone for a short while and they're back again. And so I'm just wondering about the expense that, say, the city police or the county sheriffs would have to go to obtain this material, when in many situations it wouldn't be necessary. The original bill spoke about 30 days after the person it turned up missing, or was reported missing. And so I'm just wondering about the expense that we're going to bring upon Dennis and upon local agents, police agencies, when there isn't a need shown right at that immediate time.
Okay. Let me hold that point just a minute, Representative Scavero. I want to get closure on this other issue, then we'll come back to your point. Okay, let's go at it one more time. This committee will follow along here. Section 3 directs the police agency to which the report is made to request directly from any dentist, dentist, etc., information as is likely to be useful in identifying the human remains of the missing person. Okay? Section 4 imposes the obligation to respond to requests for identifying information pursuant to Section 3 of this Act. Okay. However, Section 4 goes on to say information obtained is restricted to use, maybe that's the difference, to use for the identification of missing persons, location, and the identification of unidentified human remains. Frank? There may not be a problem here, I just want to be sure.
Right. Frank Hoover from Legislative Council's office. I think you're right, Mr. Chairman. My understanding when the request of these amendments came down, and I worked over with Mr. Davidson over a period of about 2 days, massaging that rough draft of the language for the amendments, and that it was prompted by this federal legislation that will do two things. It will allow a centralization of information to do two things. To locate missing persons, for instance, children who have disappeared, for instance, and been found in forced child prostitution, or who have run away from home and are in New York and engaging in child prostitution, that sort of thing. And also to provide a central clearinghouse for the remains. And I think you're right in Section 3, that probably should line up, and it should say likely to be useful in identifying
the missing person
or the human remains of the missing person, and that would tend to line it up. Yep. I think that gives an oversight in there.
Okay.
Mr. Davidson's here.
Any comment, Mr. Davidson?
I'm Shirley Davidson, assistant manager of LEDS. Yeah, I think the intent was, and still is, that probably the language in sub 2 of 4 should refer to identification rather than location of missing persons. This type of information is never going to assist you in locating a missing person. It would help you identify a person who was found in a state where they couldn't identify themselves, potentially.
Right.
But not necessarily dead. Hopefully not many of our missing will wind up having to be identified from their remains.
Right. The more pressing issue, however, is the one I was just discussing. I'd like to look at Section 3. Do you have the LC amendments there?
This is what I had, yes.
Section 3, subsection B, the question is, in line 17, whether the information which we're directing the agency to request should include a reference to information which is likely to be useful in identifying the missing person, as well as information that is likely to be useful in identifying the human remains of the missing person.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think that would be an appropriate change and probably should be made.
And the information for all practical purposes is going to be the same.
I assume so.
The
yes.
Scars and the bone breaks and things like that. And it would also be up in line 12, I think, also. Sure.
Lennon?
I'm sorry, I was talking and missed that. What was the change?
I'm going to propose an amendment that will make the bill consistent throughout with respect to the scope of the information that can be requested. And it is It is information likely to be useful in identifying the missing person or human remains of the missing person. The chair would so move. In line 12, in line 17, is that all? Oh, and then on line 4 of page 3, delete location and substitute identification. Then I suppose to be consistent, we should say, strike and the identification and insert or. Identification of missing persons or unidentified human remains. It's the intention of my motion to make that change consistently throughout in those other locations.
No, he just said that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, while I'm here, could we address the question raised by Representative Scavera about the...
Yeah, let me adopt this amendment if I can, and we'll come to that. Further discussion of the chair's amendment. Is there any objection? Okay, let's go to Representative Scavera's point now. Would you like to comment on that?
The intent of the amendment as drafted was not to require police agencies to go out and get this information within 48 hours. There currently exists a missing person system both at the state and federal levels, and the intent was to require entry of those persons so reported into that system. And I think each police department or sheriff's office or state police would only go beyond that step if they had facts before them that justified it.
There is no time limit on that next step, though, is there intended here?
There's no time limit on the next step, really. I think that the agency handling the complaint would have to make some kind of a judgment on the merits of the facts before them, whether that was justified. If it's, as he said, another runaway kid that's run away four times in the last month, I don't think that they're going to do that. These amendments were presented to representatives of both the Sheriff's Chief Association, and they didn't have any problem with it the way it was written. All it does, place a requirement they don't now have. As a matter of practice, most agencies enter their missing people into those systems anyway. It's just almost routinely done at some point shortly after receiving the report. But this would place a requirement for them to make the entry, which does not now exist. And I don't know, Sheriff Burks is here. You might have any comment on that, Dave?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sheriff Burks in Eugene. I have not had a chance to review that. I am concerned about any additional workload in that our budgets are being cut very dramatically in almost every sheriff's office in the state and many police departments. I'm further concerned that the definition of a runaway or a missing person, there are a variety of reasons that people are missing. A husband and wife may split up, and the wife may want to leave, and I'm not sure about entering that person if we have evidence that person left of their own free will. I'm not quite sure about the entry of that person into the system. I am concerned about any additional work requirements other than what we're doing.
I think basically, if I'm correct though, working with police agencies, most of them are making the entries into the existing files currently.
Yes.
Isn't that right, Dave? So this would require that within a specified period of time, which now is done fairly routinely, but not a requirement. But this would place a requirement, this current language, and that is a change.
Fairly routinely within 48 hours, that is occurring. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes.
I think it varies, Mr. Chairman, because in many cases on runaway juveniles, when it's pretty apparent that's what it is, we tell the people, we make a note of it or a small report, which I don't think is entered in any place except our own computerized report system. I don't believe that goes on to you. And then we ask the people to let us know if the person does not return within 48 hours. That's not standard procedure across the state.
Well, within 48 hours, if you do not get a report of the person having returned, then will you take the step, you will enter it into into the system?
Hopefully that's what would occur. I'm afraid currently a lot of those slip through the cracks.
Mr. Chairman, in the information provided originally with the original amendments, I attached some information relating to the types of missing persons that are currently in the system, and they are systematically segregated by types. There are missing persons who are considered to be endangered, missing persons who are not missing of their own free will, they are runaway juveniles, and I would assume that procedurally the second step would probably not be allowed depending upon how the entry was originally made, and that basically is going to be a decision made, I think, by the police department based upon the facts that are available to them, whether they're going to consider this person endangered and go further. I don't know there's any way that could be legislated. Because having been in that business for a number of years, I know the types of reports that the sheriff is referring to, and they're not going to discontinue. They're going to keep coming.
Representative Scavera, I think what's been said at least addresses your concern about the impact of the 48 hours as it relates to this larger responsibility here.
Now, yes.
Still leaves, I suppose, the question of whether a 48-hour rule in terms of entry into the state and federal records is somehow unreasonable. It doesn't strike me as such, being given the nature of what we're dealing with here. But did you say that provision had been reviewed with at least associations of the sheriff?
Yes, I had presented it to those members who represent the associations on our advisory committee, and I understand it was discussed.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I'm on the Legislative Committee of the Sheriff's Association. This is the first that I'm aware of it. And we were just picking up on it in the back of the room right now. Unfortunately, the communication must have broken down somewhere.
It didn't get to you.
I would like to take it to my association and find out the impact on the department in reference to the 48-hour rule. I think that could be substantial.
Well, I have nothing to say about whether you take it or not. I would, given where we are in the session and my desire to try to keep the procedural package of the committee somewhat together, what I'd like to do, if the committee's amenable, is to otherwise report the bill. And if the 48-hour provision, Sheriff, has some greater burden attached to it that justifies the Senate committee digging into that more, I wonder if you'd see anything unreasonable with your taking that issue up with them rather
Not
than
at all,
holding
Mr.
the
Chair.
Bill further.
That'd be fine.
I wouldn't ordinarily try to do that thing, but we've got a large workload and we need to keep moving. Right? And that would give you, I'm sure, an opportunity to raise some concern we might not have had a chance to really delve into deeply.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Mr. Scavera.
Yeah, part of my problem was I think that, in all honesty, I hadn't read this as closely as I should. I read this page two of this amendments closer now, and I'm not so concerned with the expense and the amount of extra work it would have to put on the local agencies. I'm reading, the only thing they have to do is put that initial information in within the first 48 hours.
Yes.
And then they're to provide a form for the person reporting the missing person to fill out where they evidently who their dentist was and who their doctor was and things like that. And then that information is to be also put in with the central agency when the local agency gets it. So it's not worrying me, I guess, as much as my first fear.
Further discussion of the bill as amended?
May I ask for clarification?
Linda?
I just want to ask for clarification on one point. Under Section 4, is it correct that the dentist or doctor or whoever will turn this information over either to the police agency or to an individual who has reported the person missing and has the form and goes directly to the doctor and dentist? Then is there an expectation requirement that they fill that information in on that form and give it back to that person?
I think the intent of that section was to leave it open so that the police agency would have the option of requesting that be done by the reporting parent or guardian, or the police agency could take direct action themselves if they felt circumstances justified. Otherwise, they could request the reporting person to get the information and bring it in.
Thank you.
One other question before we, in section, one other issue that Linda raised, in section, subsection 2 of section 5, the issue of sealing versus destroying information relating to a missing person who is discovered to be living. Can you comment on that for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. From the standpoint of the automated systems, which is my concern with this bill, it makes no difference to the local agencies who have the paper files and the information. It may make a difference. Once they cancel the records from the computer system, it's gone. It's no more concern to us. But they will have collected probably paper information at the local police station or sheriff's office. And I don't know, the definition of sealing or destruction is sometimes a little hazy,